Well, good morning, East Point Church. For those of you who don't know me, my name is John Perrine. I've recently had the privilege of coming on staff part-time here at East Point to help out with some exciting projects ahead, and I'm really, really just thrilled to be here. This morning, I'm hoping as we dive into God's Word together that you can get to know me a little bit more as I share some of my story. But more than anything else, I'm here just to say, wow. Once again, we are back online. Once again, you are watching me. Now, the good news is we're all caught up. We are, in fact, together. But the downside is we're going to have some more videos these next couple weeks, and we're not going to be able to worship together. Now, while that is a downside, this morning, as with so many of the sermons recently that we've had at East Point, I want to lean into this moment we find ourselves in, this moment of crisis. And in fact, I was drawn to a text, a passage in particular, that finds two of Jesus' disciples themselves facing a similar moment of crisis. So if you look with me at your Bibles, at Luke chapter 24, we're going to talk about Luke 24 verses 13 to 35. So this morning, my question that I want to ask you is this: what do we talk about when we find ourselves in a crisis? If you look with me at our passage in Luke 24 verses 13, it's going to say this: "Now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened." Okay, so what's going on in this passage? Well, we find ourselves at the end of Luke, after Jesus' death, before his resurrection appearances to all of the disciples, and probably two of Jesus's 70, maybe, this close band of followers who had committed themselves to living with Jesus, two are going to be walking on a road to the village of Emmaus. Now, Emmaus is about 7 miles outside of Jerusalem. We still don't know exactly where Emmaus is. It probably wasn't a very big village. But these two disciples have a day in front of them. And so, like anyone who finds themselves in a crisis, we're told in verse 14, they were talking with each other about everything that had happened. Now, imagine what that conversation might have been like for these two disciples. They probably would have been there the day that Jesus entered Jerusalem. They would have seen him as he was riding on a donkey, as the crowds thronged the streets and were waving these leaves, shouting, "Hosanna." They would have been there when Jesus cleared the temple. Maybe they would have felt this rush of excitement, this moment where they were saying, maybe this is it. Maybe this is finally the time when everything in Israel is going to change. But they also would have been there when they heard the shout, someone beckoning them, "Come quick, they've got Jesus." Maybe they would have been there at the trial as they watched Jesus be accused of crimes he did not commit, as they watched Pilate wash his hands of any responsibility. Maybe they would have been there as Jesus had the cross on his shoulder. And I can't help but wonder, what were those disciples feeling? I think when we find ourselves in a crisis, what often occurs is that we get fixated on past hopes. We're going to find in just a moment in our passage that these disciples are talking about what they had hoped might have come to be. And for so many of us, this is what a crisis disrupts. It disrupts hopes of what we had for our future, hopes of what we had wanted this year to be. I've got a lot of friends that have just been wrestling with the crisis, as I'm sure you're wrestling with the crisis of the coronavirus pandemic and what it's done to this year, to the year 2020. And one friend in particular had a job offer. They were waiting on a job. They actually were going to have to fly out. They had this trial period set up. It was going to be a huge move across the country for them back in the United States. And their trial period was set for last May, and it didn't happen because of the coronavirus. I mean, this friend knows with these disciples what it feels like when something had happened that just disrupted all the past hopes for what the year might have been. Another friend of mine took the huge risk just this last March to open up a coffee shop. This has been his dream for the longest time. He'd been working for the last 6 years towards this moment, and inevitably, this year, lockdown after lockdown, has disrupted his business, has caused his dream to waver. I mean, is this coffee shop gonna survive? This is what happens when a crisis occurs. It disrupts all of our past hopes, and we find ourselves with these disciples just trying to talk about it, trying to make sense of it, trying to figure out what happened. I mean, these disciples would have been there and seen all that Jesus had been doing. They had probably felt all of their own hopes and desires for where things might have gone. And now those hopes were dashed. And they were just talking, saying, what happened? Well, interestingly, in our story, a stranger is going to appear. If you look with me back at the text, this is going to be verse 15 to 16. It says this: as they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them, but they were kept from recognizing him. I love the playfulness of the Gospels in this story. I love the playfulness of Jesus here. Even though the stakes, as we might know, are very, very high. I mean, it's possible these disciples were getting out of town because they didn't want to be recognized as followers of Jesus when Jesus had just been killed. Yet, as they're walking, suddenly a stranger is going to appear, and we're told they were kept from recognizing him. Now, most commentators think here that it was Jesus who was keeping them from recognizing him. This maybe was a spiritual act. Maybe after Jesus' resurrection, his body appeared different. We don't really know. But there's a sense, as we sit with this verse, where we do have to wonder, I mean, why is it that these disciples didn't recognize him? Is it possible these disciples were moving quite quickly? Is it possible in their agitation about all these past hopes they had that they simply weren't paying attention? Is it possible that they weren't looking for Jesus? I mean, Jesus had died. He'd been crucified. All of the hopes they had were dashed on the rocks. These disciples had given up on the whole shebang. They were leaving town. Now, as the stranger emerges, something interesting is going to happen. In verse 17, we're told that this stranger approaches them. This is what it says. The stranger asks them, what are you discussing together as you walk along? Now, these two disciples, we're told, are going to stand still. It says, their faces were downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened here in these days? Now, this is my favorite part of the story. Jesus is going to respond, what things? He asked. Now, I don't know about you, but if someone approached you at this point in the year and they were talking to you about 2020 and you were sharing with them just thoughts on the year, disappointments, the things that hadn't quite panned out for you, and you mentioned, well, of course, you know, the coronavirus and everything that's been going on, and the person looked at you and said, coronavirus? What do you mean, coronavirus? You would be feeling a little bit skeptical, right? I don't think these disciples are totally out of line. In fact, a couple of my favorite stories that popped up, I went back and looked this up. In March, there was a strange period for about 2 weeks where a few pockets around the world had been isolated from the news that a global pandemic was raging. Now, one of them, strangely, were the cast of Big Brothers across Europe. So there was a Canadian cast, an Australian cast, and most disturbingly, a Germany cast to Big Brother, who had intentionally, as they'd been filming, you know, their phones were off, they'd been cut off from the outside world, the producers of the show intentionally kept them from knowing the very important news that a global pandemic was now going everywhere in the world. And the German show in particular, you can find this on YouTube, filmed the cast's reaction as they showed them news clips. I mean, this is just strange and cruel. Less cruel, but still funny, was the actor, Jared Leto, who had happened to be away on a 12-day silence and solitude retreat in the desert, didn't have his phone, and emerged right in the middle of March to discover that the world had changed. Now, this is the humor of the moment, where this stranger is asking them, you know, all of Jerusalem would have been buzzing from the death of Jesus. But this stranger wants to know, what happened? What happened? Now, there's actually a deeper reason for this, and Jesus knows it. Jesus is giving an opportunity for these two disciples to share their perspective on what happened. Essentially, the stranger is asking them, what's the story? What do you make of your current crisis? How do you tell the story of the crisis that you're in? These disciples are going to reveal their hands. This is coming from verse 19 to 24. Disciples are going to focus on two things as they tell their story. The first is going to be on those past hopes, probably the hopes they had just been talking about. And secondly, the disciples are going to talk about their present disappointments. So look with me at verses 19 to 24. The disciples are going to respond saying this, "Well, about Jesus of Nazareth," they replied, "he was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it is the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but didn't find the body. They came and told us they'd seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see Jesus." Now, this is a very accurate summary of the disciples' crisis. The summary is Jesus was crucified, that now the body isn't to be found. It's been 3 days since it happened, and we're all pretty confused. But underneath the summary, we notice those past hopes, especially that line, "we had hoped." We had hoped he was going to be the one to redeem Israel. The disciples are holding in their crisis onto everything they had hoped the future would be. And yet, notice it's their story they're focused on. They had hoped. They had stake in what they wanted Jesus to be for them. Now, the second facet of their storytelling is subtly there in the disappointments of what hasn't occurred in the present. You notice the women came to them with the story that Jesus' body wasn't there, but the disciples are focused on the fact that the women couldn't find his body. It's in verse 23. And then secondly, some of the companions went to the tomb, but they still had not seen Jesus. I mean, you can see how in the crisis, there's all kinds of ways to tell the story. There's all kinds of ways to figure out what's going on. But these disciples, at this moment in the crisis, they can't see anything else but the hopes they used to have that were no longer there and the disappointments in the present of what hadn't been yet seen. When I think about my own life and think about a crisis where past hopes meet present disappointments, one of the worst years in my life came about in the year 2012. Now, 2012 was the culmination, while I was in college, of a lot of really hard things that had been happening with my family. My family lived back in Arizona. My three other siblings, I have two older sisters and a younger brother, all chose to stay in Arizona and go to Arizona State University because my parents had been working in ministry on Arizona State's campus. Now, a lot of painful things built up to 2012. Crises normally have lots of aspects rumbling under the surface. But in the summer of 2012 specifically, years of challenges that my parents had been having with the organization they worked with, and years of challenges that had been building with different students that had been in their ministry, would then culminate in years of challenges that they've been having in their marriage. And all of this would lead to the tragic and really devastating collapse of their ministry, the year of 2012, when my parents were asked to resign. In my family history, in my family story, this was cataclysmic. This was all of our family's identity, all of the years my family had invested in ministry, all of the ways in which my siblings and I had been connected to each other. And for me personally, I was living in Chicago at this point. I was studying the Bible. I was preparing for ministry. For me personally, if you would have talked to me, I would have said, I had hoped to return to Arizona after 2012. I had hoped to go back and possibly even work with my parents. I had hoped to return to my family. And because of this summer, the collapse of my parents' ministry, stress and challenges on their marriage, stress and challenges on each of my siblings, all of it would collide in the summer of 2012 when, ironically, my wife and I were trying to get married. That was the summer we did, in fact, get married here in Belfast. But as you can imagine, I mean, this was a summer of crisis. All the conversations that we had back and forth, family members, friends from Arizona, just trying to pick up the pieces, trying to figure out what had happened, holding all of these past hopes. Man, we had hoped this would have gone differently. Facing just present disappointments. I mean, can you believe what's gone? Can you believe the debt we're now gonna have to face? Can you believe the spiritual challenges, the questions we're trying to piece back together? This was our crisis. But in my story and in the disciples' story of crisis, the important factor that we have not yet considered is what Jesus has to say to a crisis. If Jesus were to meet you on the road today, and Jesus were to be the one who, as a stranger, just asked you quite casually, what's happened in 2020? What's it looked like? I'm curious what you would say. But what's beautiful in our text is that we actually have how Jesus responds to these two disciples and what they shared. Look with me back again at our passage. This is now going to be verse 25 to 26. Jesus says this. He said to them, "How foolish you are, and how slow to believe all that the prophets had spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?" And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, Jesus explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. Oh, this, as someone who studied the Bible, this is a scene I would have loved to have been there for. I mean, imagine the Bible study lesson that Jesus chose to give to these two disciples. Like, where did he take them? What verses did he hone in on? This is what biblical scholars and theologians have fantasized about their whole life, that they could ask Jesus all the questions they've never had answered. And yet here, it's these two disciples in crisis who are being taught the Bible by Jesus himself, all the things in the Bible concerning himself. Can you imagine what that kind of scene would have been like? But there's something even more important going on here. This is the first gift I think Jesus wants to give us in a crisis. The first gift Jesus has for these disciples is that he wants to retell their story with God's story. Jesus wants to retell their story. Notice how Jesus begins with a rebuke. How foolish you disciples have been and slow to believe. I mean, these disciples were talking about past hopes. They're focused on present disappointments. Jesus wants to remind them that this moment, this crisis, isn't actually about their story. This crisis is part of God's story. And if you look at God's story, what you begin to realize is that over and over again, God takes the death of a crisis and he turns it into the new life opportunity for his work to begin. Think about all of the ways in which God has taken the crisis of the past and turned it into a present opportunity. Think about Egypt and Israel, how the Israelites truly were in a crisis, truly were suffering. They were oppressed. They were enslaved. And yet it was the very crisis the Israelites found themselves in that God used as an opportunity to reveal himself, to offer his name, to show his glory, to present to Israel the covenant that he wanted to establish with them. I mean, This was a crisis turned into an opportunity. Think as well about the exile. All those moments Israel had as they were scattered throughout the land, where they would have been looking at each other in Assyria, in Babylon, in the Persian Empire, and they would have just been saying to each other, what's happened? You know, what happened to all of those past hopes we had? What happened to all of the disappointments we have in the present? And God, in the exile, would use the crisis of the exile for the new opportunity, for new life that would take place through Daniel in the courts of Nebuchadnezzar, through Esther in the court of Artaxerxes, through Nehemiah in the favor of Darius in rebuilding Jerusalem. I mean, in some ways, this is what Jesus is trying to tell the disciples. Hey, you've missed God's story. This is what God does. God takes a crisis and he turns it into a new opportunity. When I go back to my 2012, which really was a devastating year, and I don't want to take anything away from the pain and the grief of a crisis, what I see now is that God actually had a new story that he was starting to tell that very summer. I mean, think about it, just from my marriage alone, just from all the new life and the new opportunity, if I was fixated too much on present disappointments, if I had held too firmly onto all that I had lost, and sometimes I really did, sometimes it was like I couldn't see anything else but the opportunities that were no longer there for me. If that was the case, I would have missed the work God was doing in the present, the work God was doing in my new marriage, the work God was doing in my new extended family that would culminate in me returning here to Belfast now, really the work that God was doing in my own call to ministry. That very year was a wonderful year of new relationships that would form, that would last the past 7 years. It would be core to Jenna and my marriage. I mean, all of these wonderful, wonderful opportunities and relationships that I would have missed if I hadn't been paying attention to God's story instead of being focused on my story. This is part of what Jesus does in a crisis. He wants to retell your story. So for you, I wonder what that means for 2020. What if 2020 is not a year primarily about past hopes that have led to your present disappointments? I mean, think of these friends of mine. What if 2020 is not about the year you didn't get to do a new job? What if 2020 is not about the year that your new business found itself facing a terribly restrictive climate and environment? What if 2020 was all about the new opportunities of what God had been doing through unexpected gifts that only a lockdown could reveal? I mean, for me, I think about time with family. I never would have spent as much time as I have in 2020. And there have been some beautiful moments, beautiful opportunities for us to go deeper in conversation, for us to actually know each other better. I think about all the intentional ways, even now, in this moment, that we as a church are getting to love our community differently. The way with leaflet drops and fruit baskets and being present to the very real needs our community has. None of those would have been possible without a crisis. And so is it possible that when Jesus is walking on the road and he turns and asks you, you know, what happened in 2020? Is it possible that God's story is trying to point out to you more of the present opportunities than the past hopes and the disappointments you might be tempted to fixate on? That's the first gift Jesus wants to bring to a crisis. The second gift is this. As we continue looking at our passage, the story's not quite done. It says in verse 28, as they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus continued on as if he were going further. But they urged him strongly, saying, stay with us, for it is nearly evening. The day is almost over. So he went in to stay with them. Now, I want to pause in this moment, because yet again, we find the tantalizing prospect that these disciples might have missed the opportunity to realize Jesus was with them the whole time. I mean, the first moment came when a stranger shows up on the road, and for some reason, they can't quite see. But to these disciples' credit, they're present and wise enough to engage in a conversation. Now, in this moment, Jesus almost gives them a test. I mean, he goes as if he wants to carry on, as if he's going to keep walking. And if they hadn't said anything, then maybe they would have missed the chance to realize the one who had just told them God's story, the one who had just retold to them the story of their crisis. And yet here, in this moment, they do see. They see enough to urge him to stay with them, and something amazing is going to happen. It says in verse 30, when he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were open, and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. It's very intentional in Luke's gospel that those four verbs he uses, that Jesus took bread, gave thanks, broke it, began to give it to them. These are the four verbs that will show up in Jesus feeding the 5,000. And these are the same verbs that are going to show up at the Last Supper. This is a communion moment. This is where the body and the blood of Jesus show us who Jesus is, show us that God is in fact for us, with us in Jesus Christ. Yet here in this moment, miraculously, Jesus chooses at the table to reveal himself to the disciples, that Jesus had actually been the one who was walking with them the whole time. I can't help but think, in a crisis, how many times I may have missed Jesus because I was too busy, I was too distracted, or I was too focused on my story. Yet here, the disciples are paying just enough attention that they can see it, that it is actually Jesus who was with them. One of my favorite stories in the Old Testament comes from the book of Daniel. I mean, you've definitely heard this story before. It's the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And the story, of course, goes that there's this huge crisis presented to these three followers of God, right? A massive statue of Nebuchadnezzar is built. There's some crafty scheming going on behind the scenes. There's this threat that anyone who doesn't worship the statue of Nebuchadnezzar, which the other officials know these three young men won't do, they're going to be thrown into this fiery furnace. And so sure enough, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego refuse to give in to the crisis. And they're going to be taken to this fiery furnace, and they're thrown in, and it's so hot that even the guards who throw them in are going to be burned up instantly. Yet this is what Daniel 4, verses 24 to 25 say. Then King Nebuchadnezzar leaped to his feet in amazement and asked his advisors, "Weren't there just three men that were tied up and thrown into the fire?" They replied, "Certainly, Your Majesty." But he said, "Look, I see four men walking around in the fire, unbound and unharmed, and the fourth looks like a son of the gods." I bring up this story because recently a friend of mine posted this saying that's been going around on Instagram. Perhaps you've seen it, but I think it really speaks to this moment of crisis that we're in and how easy it is in a crisis to think that God has abandoned us, to think that the crisis itself is a sign that somehow God is angry with us, somehow God is disappointed with us, or that somehow God is nowhere to be found. But instead, the post that this friend had simply said this: "Sometimes Jesus saves you from the fire, but sometimes Jesus enters it with us instead." I think that's exactly what's going on here in the crisis for these two disciples. They thought that if God really loved them, that God would have saved them from the fire. They had hoped God was going to take care of everything and somehow be able to avoid all the suffering and the disappointment that came with a painful crucifixion weekend. Yet, Jesus is here to reveal to these disciples that when they find themselves in a crisis, Jesus actually is walking alongside them, It's exactly what Jesus wants to reveal. If the first gift that Jesus gives us in a crisis is that he wants to retell our story, the second is that he wants to reveal he's actually been with us this whole time. So for you, this Christmas season, I wonder as you're walking along the road, as you're pondering this crisis, undeniably, that we find ourselves in, a crisis of restrictions and lockdowns, a crisis of depression and loneliness and disconnection. I mean, 2020 will undeniably go down in history as a painful, jarring, difficult year. But I wonder how Jesus wants to reveal himself to you, how Jesus wants to walk with you, if only you have eyes to see him. So that would be my prayer for you this December as we're about to head into full Christmas swing. This December, how does Jesus want to reveal himself to you? Is it possible that Jesus in this season wants to reveal himself in prayer? That there's this new outpouring, this new overflow as you are here in the midst of a crisis that you begin to cry out to God, Jesus, show yourself to me this Christmas season? Or is it possible that Jesus wants to reveal himself through this community that is the church? Are there phone calls that you need to pick up again? Are there maybe people you haven't connected to that if you could reach out to over conversation, you could realize as you're talking to this friend, the story of what's happened in 2020, that Jesus actually has been a part of this conversation the whole time? I know when I was in that painful summer of 2012, I needed friends to walk with beside me, because somehow when you had a friend that you were talking to about everything that had happened, somehow it is those moments in particular that Jesus can show up and surprise you both. But is it possible that this Christmas could really just be about this Road to Emmaus moment? Where as we approach the end of the year, as we're about to close the chapter on 2020, that what Jesus wants to invite you to do is to retell God's story instead of your story this year. To look for the present opportunities rather than your present disappointments. And to ask, even in this final month, what is it God wants to do in 2020? What is it God has been doing in you, through you, with you? And where is it that Jesus wants to reveal to you that he's actually been walking with you this whole time? My prayer for you, East Point, is that in Christmas season of 2020, you would know God's story is always working present opportunities out of past crises, and that you would see Jesus has actually been walking with you this whole time. Much love. Can't wait to see you again soon.